Do you wish healthy didn't have to be hard? What if there was another way? Well, there is. And it's the Jade Walkaway, where healthy is delicious, easy and exciting, and doesn't have to mean saying no to chocolate and red wine. Welcome back to the show. You're here with your qualified naturopath, Jade Walker. And let me tell you that today's episode is one that a lot of women will want to listen to. Joining us today is another rather experienced naturopath who I have no doubt our female listeners will have a lot of respect for once they get to know her. Not only is she a wonderful female health naturopath, she's also the founder and creator of the popular Australian hormone balancing formula, FEM21. And she is the wonderful Mia Robertson. Welcome, Mia.
Thank you, Jade, for having me on. I'm so excited to do a podcast with you. So awesome that you created this.
Oh, you're so welcome. Honestly, I really am honored to have you on because I was using your product before knowing you or having even spoken to you. So I think it's wonderful that we're both in a profession where we can connect with like-minded people, and it's just so great to have you here.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. So before we jump in, I'm going to ask you two questions that I ask everyone that comes on the show, and that is, what's your favorite healthy food and or thing to do, and what's your favorite indulgence? Because I love to show people that we're all human and we love a bit of both worlds. So what's your favorite healthy food or thing to do?
I would say my favorite healthy food would be a green smoothie. I think green smoothies are just awesome in terms of being able to pack so much goodness into the one jug and zhuzh that up and set you up for a great day. So I absolutely love green smoothies. My favorite indulgence has got to be chocolate, and I'm a huge dark chocolate fan. I don't have it every day, but I do enjoy some dark chocolate.
And do you have any favorite brands?
Good question. I'd probably go just like green and blacks. Mm-hmm. And I also would say a vice of mine that I would admit above and beyond dark chocolate, because that's not really that bad for you, would be coffee. But I've given up coffee for the last 6 weeks nearly, so it's not really front of mind as being my current vice, but you know, I know it does sneak into my life from time to time, and I like to sort of take a step back and get myself off that daily requirement of having a coffee a day. So yeah, I try to do that a couple of times a year.
Absolutely. And honestly, I think it's a vice for like 80% of people, particularly in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I have been a coffee addict in my past, but I just realized I couldn't do it. It just didn't work for me. So it's hard coming off it at first, I must say.
Definitely. I think it just gets its way into your life and just wires your brain and your energy cycles to become dependent on it. And it feels like such a need and like that dependency. So you're like, oh, I've got to have a coffee, or, you know, I've got a big day on, so I need to have a coffee, or, you know, I need it to function and think clearly. But I've just realized that you don't, and I'm so much better when I'm off it. But I still enjoy the occasional one here and there, but certainly not daily. I don't think it's a good idea for anybody, really.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to hear that from you, that you don't think it's a good idea for most people. Everyone listening, sorry to break it to you. Okay, so a little bit about you, Mia. So I believe you've been a naturopath since 2006. You're the founder of Lifestart Naturopathics on the beautiful Gold Coast in Queensland. So jealous. With your sidekick naturopath, Lucy Fitzgibbons. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I've lived on the Gold Coast for 17 years now. I was originally born and bred up in Cairns, North Queensland, so even further away from you. Moved down to the Gold Coast to study naturopathy, and I did that, my Bachelor of Health Science, for 4 years at the Australian College of Natural Medicine, which was then bought out by Endeavour, I think about 18 months after I graduated. So yeah, that was back in 2006. I've been in clinical practice over that last 14 years, and I've had two children in amongst that as well.
Wow.
And and also created Fem21 nearly 5 years ago.
Wow. And I've got to know, how old were you when you started practice?
I must have been, so I'm 37 now, so yeah, I must have been 23.
Wow, because I was, when I saw that you'd been practicing since 2006 and I was counting back the years, I was like, wow, you look very youthful.
Oh, thank you.
So there you go, 23, that's amazing. So just for those people who are listening, on today's episode, we're going to dive into all things women's health, obviously, Fem21, and also we'll dive a little bit into the controversial oral contraceptive pill as well, because I really love talking about that one. Mm-hmm. But first of all, yeah, you feel me. But first of all, I want to learn a little bit more about you, Mia. So as with many naturopaths, you know, it's quite often it's not, we don't find this industry. It's not something we dream of as a child, you know, when I'm 5 years old, I want to be a naturopath when I grow up, you know. It finds us. So was that the case for you, and what was it that made you become a naturopath?
Yeah, so interesting origin story. I started, well, my parents, my mum and dad, have always been into natural medicine and natural health. My dad is a holistic chiropractor, and he trained in the States, so they did a lot of nature cure stuff and fasting and as part of his chiropractic degree. And my mum's a nutritionist, and so they had a chiropractic practice, you know, growing up, as you know, involved or seeing that all the time. And so we never went to doctors, we never took any medication. If we were sick, we'd be fasting, juicing. I grew up vegetarian, I've never eaten meat my whole life. So I had that really natural medicine upbringing. And then I started work at 14, as soon as I was able, at a health food store that mum and dad obviously frequent a lot. So they knew me, they were happy to take me on. So I started doing Thursday nights and Saturdays there after school. And about a year into working there, you know, you're just such a sponge when you're younger and you're working with other women. And when you're hearing, you know, and learning from customers coming in and other women's experiences that are helping them. And there was a naturopath that was working in that store. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're an angel. And this is the path that I want to take. So at about 15, I decided I wanted to be a naturopath because I absolutely loved helping people. I just felt like it was so rewarding. And, you know, just seeing those little things, like you would recommend some stuff from the health food shop and then that person would come back like a month later to repurchase their things and they'd say, oh, I'm feeling so much better or whatever. And you're like, oh, this is cool. And so, yeah, I took a year off after I graduated and then I started studying. And I guess, you know, I didn't dream of becoming a naturopath at 5, but, you know, from 15, I was pretty set on it and I knew that was my purpose. And still here.
Wow. And still to be honest, that is, you know, quite young for most people that decide that they want to be a naturopath. So there you go. You are not quite within the, you know, the usual, which is amazing. Yeah. And I think how amazing to grow up in a holistic family as well. It's to have a father who's a chiropractor. Amazing.
So good. So many perks with that, you know.
Oh, I would love an adjustment every week. Thank you. So at what point then did you decide, you know, along your naturopathic journey that you would dive into retail and create a product such as Fem21?
So I guess it was quite a few years in the, you know, creation of it in terms of my own story with my own issues but also I was working, when I graduated, I started working at a fertility clinic on the Gold Coast called Sharkey's Healing Centre, and that was massive. Like, we would be seeing people back to back, and what, 11 patients a day, and I was like just run off my feet, just jumped into a really super busy clinic, which was great because that's kind of what my expectation was from then on about this is how we got to work. And so I did that. I was working, you know, with women's health and fertility for a good 5 years. And then some things shifted for me where I decided I wanted to sort of branch out and do more general women's health. And I was a bit burnt out. My kids were sort of pretty young at that stage as well. I had like a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, sorry. And so, you know, young kids working, you know, in a busy clinic, and yeah, just wanted to take a little bit of a slower pace. And so, yeah, started working with some integrative GPs, and that was really great, and doing more general women's health. So seeing, you know, women coming off the pill and for hormonal acne and endo and polycystic and menopausal issues, which was, you know, great and so interesting. And after, I guess, you know, my own hormonal stuff had been brewing in the background for quite a few years. So because I grew up in that sort of environment with my parents, we never went to doctors. And so I was having irregular cycles, hormonal acne, male pattern hair growth, you know, all of those typical polycystic ovarian syndrome symptoms. But I wasn't officially diagnosed, and I didn't realize that until I, you know, started my studies and could correlate the symptoms to what I was experiencing, you know, personally. And so I was in a relationship with my now husband and decided to trial the pill. Dumb idea.
But everyone goes through that.
Yeah. I thought, you know, I want to sort my acne out, regulate out my cycles, those, you know, things that they prescribe the pill for. And I did it for about 6 months, and I was a total mental case over that time. I was really anxious and depressed, so depressed, like suicidal thoughts, and really quite low and just not coping emotionally whatsoever. And I just feel like it just didn't sit right in my body, especially since I'd come from such a clean, natural upbringing. And so I came off the pill and I felt a lot better. But not long after that, I ended up conceiving. And so my boyfriend at the time and I decided to get married, and we had a bit of a shotgun wedding, you know, planned it all in about 6 weeks. And 2 weeks before our wedding, I had a miscarriage.
Oh, wow.
And so that was pretty full on, like just this hormonal roller coaster that I was on at the time. And then I ended up falling pregnant 3 months after we were married again with my daughter, who's now 13. But throughout that pregnancy, I had, you know, threatened miscarriage, a lot of, you know, hyperemesis in that first 14 weeks. I was, yeah, not in a good space hormonally, then came off, finished, you know, pregnancy, gave birth, had a really, you know, bit of a traumatic birth with her, ended up breastfeeding, which was wonderful for 2 years, 24 months. And then towards the end of that time frame, I didn't really have a period back for a long time. And then I ended up conceiving with my second daughter. And whilst I was still breastfeeding, and so I was really depleted, I was also working at that time too, in clinic. And another two sort of scary trips to the hospital where I thought I was having a miscarriage at 12 weeks and 14 weeks, but sustained the pregnancy. Went on to breastfeed her as well for another, I think a little bit shorter for her. She was about 20 months that I ended up finishing breastfeeding, and I had the Mirena put in, and that was the that stage. Mm-hmm. And so I had the Mirena, and I just guess I was a hormonal train wreck after that whole series of events at that time. And each cycle I would, I'd be so fatigued and emotional, and my skin was, I had quite bad hormonal acne. And it's the worst thing when you're a naturopath and you're trying to consult people on their health, and you get, you're getting your own skin breakouts. And I was, just really up and down. And so I was blessed with the idea to do Fem21 and to sort my own issues out, but as well as to help women that I couldn't see in practice, because I was seeing similar issues with hormonal health and, estrogen metabolism issues and low progesterone levels and adrenal issues and liver and gut health and thyroid stuff and, this inflamed acidic body. And I thought, there's nothing really that covers those things holistically that's available to women in that retail space. So, the universe provides. We're next door neighbours with a guy who's now my manufacturer for Fem21. So we were neighbours, and I knew what he was doing in terms of private label manufacturing, and he had his own little line of health food sports supplements.
Wow.
And went to him with the idea and said, "Do you think you could make this for me?" And he's like, "Sure, I have no idea what these herbs are or whatever, but if you want them, then, we can do it, no probs." And so I was blessed with the capacity to start, small, with small batch sizes. I could source all my own products, and then just really built it from the ground up from there with, creating my website and writing brochures and copy for that and articles and just grew from there.
Wow. That's amazing.
This fempire that's now
fempire. I love that. That's amazing. So there are a lot of ingredients in Fem21, obviously 21 ingredients. So from my own perspective, obviously I can see that those ingredients are clearly targeted towards liver detoxification, supporting progesterone and estrogen, supporting the thyroid, protecting you from stress, healing the gut. But for some, the average female, they might not understand, why do I need to work through the liver? What does my gut matter for my hormones? So walk us through the role, firstly, of the liver for female hormones.
So your liver plays a massive part in hormonal metabolism. And so we're producing hormones in our body from our ovaries and also from our fat cells and our adrenal system. Our whole endocrine system produces hormones. So all of those hormones get processed through the body in different ways, but our liver plays such a big part in metabolizing those hormones and clearing those toxic metabolites out of our body. And the liver dumps those hormonal metabolites into the bowel, and so we need to have healthy liver and bowel function in order to maintain a healthy hormone balance, because that's where all the metabolism is happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And sometimes when I'm explaining this to my female clients, they kind of look at me blankly like, I still don't, why are we working through the liver? Like, I don't drink alcohol. That's the first thing that comes to their mind is, oh, but I don't drink that much. I'm like, no, it's nothing to do with that.
And liver stress can come from a variety of things. I mean, you know, alcohol is certainly one of them, but some people could have a viral load that's stressing their liver, or they could be exposed to endocrine disrupting chemicals in the environment, you know, any chemicals from foods or skincare or air fresheners or, you know, different you know, toxic environmental stresses can put pressure on our liver function, which then can impact, obviously, our hormonal balance and hormonal health. So, yeah, liver is important for a variety of things, but certainly, yeah, to keep our hormones happy.
Absolutely. And, you know, going back to endocrine disrupting chemicals or EDCs, that's another one that so many women have no idea about. And, you know, these days we see quite a increased amount of endometriosis, polycystic ovarian syndrome, and just general, you know, high estrogen, low progesterone. What's your opinion on what's going on with all these EDCs and things like that?
So I think the issue is that we're just living in a bit of a toxic soup in terms of chemicals in our environment, just from industrialization and just how society is set up these days. We're, you know, just surrounded by so many plastics and, you know, plastic water bottles and storing food in plastic and liners in coffee cups and
additives,
additives that they're putting into, you know, our water supply and, you know, herbicides and pesticides and chemicals that they're putting on our foods and also like our personal care products and, you know, stuff we're putting on our faces and skin and perfumes and deodorant and air fresheners that we're smelling and, you know, treatments for fabrics and the list goes on, you know. So I think it's just really important to have, not to scare yourself with it, but to have an awareness about where you can manage it and minimize as much as possible. So that you can, you know, choose glass over plastic, you know, you can have a stainless steel or glass water bottle, you can choose organic, you can use natural skincare products and shampoo, you can avoid, you know, air fresheners, choose essential oils instead, and, you know, just make those adjustments in your environment, which, you know, certainly can play, you know, take off some of that toxic load on your system that could be affecting things.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's two points that came to mind when you were saying that. And one, first of all, would be that a lot of people feel that as long as their plastic is BPA free, that it's fine, right? But when in fact the replacement chemicals that they're using instead of BPA are still very similar in structure and still disrupting our hormones, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, plastic's not just BPA. It's a whole variety of different chemicals in there. And so just got to be aware. And, I mean, using plastics intelligently as well is important. So, you know, of course, like softer plastics are going to leach more than hard plastics will. You know, if you're heating things up and putting, you know, in plastic, then that's going to leach more and break it down. If you're washing your stuff through the dishwasher, which is really hot, you know, that's going to break down your plastics more so. So I think it's like, it's just being smart about it. If you're using plastics for storage, you know, for leftovers, for example, let them, you know, cool down first and then put them in and, you know, straight in the fridge so that they're cooling down quite quickly and they're not having like a hot substance sitting in there for a prolonged period of time leaching. You know, don't microwave in plastics. You know, ditch the ditch the one-time plastic water bottles and swap to, you know, filtered water from glass or stainless steel, you know, just those sorts of little things can make a difference.
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember one time when I was speaking with a client about the importance of reducing EDCs and just that overall toxic load, and it at first she was a little bit concerned that she was going to have to go out and replace everything in her life, and that can become overwhelming. However, it doesn't have to be that you just have to ditch everything and, you know, go and spend $1,000. You know, it's this gradual process, and eventually it becomes a way of life. And for me, like, that is just who I am, and it's easy. And quite often it can be cheaper because you make your own cleaning products, or you can use really simple things on your skin, and so on.
Yeah, 100%. And I think knowledge is power, right? That education, and then just making those adjustments, you know, as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have, you know, looking at the ingredients in FEM21, there are just so many beautiful herbs in there. So I've picked out a couple of my favorite herbs, and I thought we could discuss how they work, because, you know, as I'm sure you would agree, I'm just so passionate about teaching people the power of herbal medicine. Like, I think people actually don't have any idea that there's research behind these herbs. And in the case of, say, for example, Vitex or Chase Tree, it's really powerful stuff. So starting off with Vitex, tell us a little bit how that works for the female.
Yeah, so I love Vitex or Chase Tree as a herb to help with a variety of things in women's cycles. Firstly, it helps with ovulation regulation. So if you've got irregular cycles, it helps to bring ovulation back into a normal pattern. So it's good for ovulation. It's also awesome for supporting progesterone production. And so bringing progesterone levels up helps minimize a lot of symptoms around, like, PMS, so mood, sore breasts, inflammation. Progesterone's our natural anti-inflammatory hormone, and it's the balancer to estrogen, which is inflammatory. So I love Chase Tree for boosting progesterone. Interestingly enough, Chase Tree also, or Vitex, also works on the pituitary, which is the master gland for our whole endocrine system. So right from the top down, it helps to restore balance hormonally through our endocrine system, and can also be beneficial for helping to increase melatonin production as well. So good for sleep too.
I was actually just having a conversation with someone today about, you know, they were wondering why they always get insomnia before their period, which is such a common one and something I've suffered with in the past as well. And, you know, talking about the way that progesterone actually works to induce that really restful sleep. And once again, a beautiful indication for Vitex.
Yeah.
But one thing about Vitex, though, is, you know, there is a little bit of disagreement about whether to use Vitex in PCOS. What's your take on that?
Interesting. So I use it, obviously. For me, it's been helpful in regulating out my cycles. And I think because of its action on the whole endocrine system, it has that modulating effect on our hormonal health. So I can understand that the background of Vitex and PCOS, thinking that it may stimulate more follicular cysts on the ovaries because it has that effect on stimulating ovulation and activity within the ovaries. But I think in combination with other things, Vitex can be really useful in polycystic. But it may not necessarily be something that you just use on its own.
Absolutely. I agree with that. And also, you know, something that we learn in naturopathic college is 1 + 1 = 4 when it comes to herbs, you know. So if you had Vitex on its own, it may not be as powerful as the synergy of combining it with another herb.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And that's not just woo-woo, guys. This is actually, like, the science has shown this to be true, which is fabulous. So another herb in there, which is, you know, I kind of see in the similar group but more so turning towards estrogen, is black cohosh. And something that particularly for menopause and things like that. So tell us about black cohosh.
So Black Cohosh has got a bit of a bad rap.
Yes.
But I absolutely love Black Cohosh. Mm. And I guess my introduction with Black Cohosh came in when I was working in that fertility space, because I found it was really helpful for modulating and helping with estrogen metabolism. So in terms of that modulation for estrogen, I found it had that effect of bringing up good estrogen and helping also to support that balance between the different types of estrogen. So the more good estrogen that we can help produce, then from our ovaries and from our endocrine system, and get that balance like a seesaw up for good estrogen, it helps to filter out.
Hey, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to tell you about the perfect tea to enjoy this spring. The number one selling Jade Walker blend, Cleanse Me Tea. Using all certified organic herbs, the Cleanse Me Tea includes some of our favorite herbs for skin health, digestion, and hormones. It includes liver herbs like dandelion and burdock root, which are known to support elimination pathways such as your lymphatics for skin and better regularity, if you know what I mean. Also used for skin conditions, particularly in hormonal acne, as well as dermatitis and psoriasis, is red clover. The Cleanse Me has the adaptogenic and healing herb Gotu Kola, which is used to promote wound healing, reduce inflammation, support the nervous system and cognition. For further anti-inflammatory support, we have the stunning yellow calendula flower petals. The uses for this little ray of sunshine in Cleanse Me are endless, from gut healing, skin and lymphatic support. And finally, we have the delicious, vibrant and antioxidant-packed hibiscus flower, also known as rosella, for a fruity taste, and it also makes the tea this beautiful, vibrant, deep pinkish red. But it doesn't just taste good. Hibiscus is used for healthy weight, support cardiovascular system and the liver. And thanks to the delicious flavour, it's not only good hot, it's just as delicious thrown over some ice with fresh mint leaves and lime for a healthy iced tea on a nice warm day. To get your Cleanse Me with free postage, head straight to jadewalker.com.au/shop.
And clear with other support like liver and detoxification support for that bad estrogen.
Oh my gosh.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You've already raised so many things I want to point out here. So, you know, one thing, because you've just touched on the fact that there are more than one estrogen, and that's such a good point to raise, because I think everyone just thinks estrogen is estrogen, progesterone is progesterone, and therefore that's the reason why they think the pill is just estrogen or progesterone. So when it comes to estrogen, we have estradiol, estrone, all those different types of estrogens. So, and what you're saying is that they all have slightly different actions and can be beneficial or may not be in certain ways.
Yeah, that's right. So we've got a variety of different types of estrogen, and our body will convert from one form of estrogen to another as well. And so we can have up to 16 different types of estrogen. So I just like to make it a bit more simple, easier to understand, to say that we've got good estrogen that helps the promotion of ovulation, our endometrial lining and our periods. It helps our libido, our cervical mucus. It helps with our breast health. It's all of those things that help us to feel feminine. It helps that, you know, internal glow, our skin, our hair. So good estrogen is really important to help us in our femininity, and that's often what we're lacking a bit with polycystic, because we're low in our good estrogen and we become more dominant by other androgens like testosterone or even bad estrogen as well. So with estrogen, I like the saying of we want to use it and then lose it.
I love
and
that.
So if we're making estrogen and we're making good estrogen, but we're not losing it and clearing it, it then can turn rogue, bad, toxic estrogen, because it can convert from one form to another. So that toxic estrogen is quite inflammatory. It also, you know, that symptomatically that contributes to pain with our periods and a heavy period, because it's also, estrogen is a growth hormone, and so it then will stimulate the growth of, say, endometriosis or ovarian cysts or fibroids or breast cysts, or, you know, dense tissue in the breast. So what we want to ensure is that we are getting rid of that bad estrogen that's inflammatory, and we're still making our good stuff and keeping that.
Absolutely. And I think this is the perfect segue into the next ingredient, which is broccoli sprouts, because the sulforaphane, the indole 3 carbanol. Tell us a little bit about that powerhouse of a thing.
So this is a little magic compound that's found in cruciferous vegetables. So it's called indole 3 carbanol, or diindole methylene, or DIM, and that's two of those indole 3 carbanols joined together makes diindole methylene. And it has a really powerful action of grabbing onto that bad toxic estrogen and then helping it to metabolize it out through the liver. And broccoli has that wonderful affinity within the liver to work there as an antioxidant, and also on that estrogen metabolism.
Oh, I love broccoli sprouts. Like, as a functional food, that would have to be up there with one of the best. And you know, if you put female hormones aside, there are just countless articles on the prevention of all sorts of diseases, and they even use it sometimes in cancer treatment as well, which is just phenomenal. I love it. I'm currently taking them myself. I love it. Okay, so another one on this list of favorite herbs, and I'm sure every naturopath will agree this is one of their favorites, and that is withania, also known as ashwagandha to some.
I knew you were going to say that. So, yes, I absolutely love withania. It's such a beautiful modulating herb for our thyroid and adrenals, and I really do love it in combination with Siberian ginseng and licorice for our adrenal health. And I very rarely will let a herbal formula go out the door without some withania in it. And so I think it's just so necessary for women in, you know, today's day and age that have got so much pressure on them to be all things to all people, and we're running ourselves, you know, empty into the ground. And so having some herbal medicine to support and nourish that adrenal system and our thyroid as well is so important for, you know, our mood and stress response and energy flow and our metabolism. And so, yeah, I love it.
Oh, likewise. And with withania being an adaptogen, obviously we have that that hero group of herbs known as adaptogens. Can you explain what adaptogens mean?
Yes, so we just group them as like how would you say?
I know, you can become speechless with how good they are.
they're just like the fairy godmothers. So they are working on that, you know, overall balancing of those stress hormones and bringing up our happy, good hormones, and working on, you know, our adrenal system, which not just modulates energy and stress, but also plays a part in inflammation control and our immune system and our metabolism. So, you know, we all know when we're stressed that our immune system gets depleted and we're more inflamed. And so we can see how the adrenals are working in there to modulate those hormones to bring up, you know, our good, strong, strengthening adrenal hormones, you know, which is that interplay and balance between cortisol and adrenaline, and then also our neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin. And so with a healthy balance there, you know, we're feeling good, and those adaptogens help us to get there.
Absolutely. I love that. So the next herb on the list is a culinary herb that everyone should have in their cupboard, and I think people will be quite surprised how powerful this one is, and that is rosemary. Tell us about how rosemary works.
So I love rosemary because it works on the thyroid. I often use it in formulations to help with, you know, healthy metabolism of T4 to active T3 and our healthy thyroid function. But it's also great as well for our liver and estrogen metabolism. It's a wonderful antioxidant too. So they're sort of like the core reasons that I included rosemary in FEM21.
Oh, it actually has so many actions, doesn't it? And even just for cognition as well and circulation, it's actually quite underrated. Not in the naturopathic world, though.
Yeah.
And then going back to the liver again, we've got a real hero herb here, which is milk thistle or St. Mary's thistle, depending who you speak to. Tell us about this wonderful liver herb.
Yeah, so St. Mary's is so beautiful for helping to support phase two liver detoxification and function. So St. Mary's also has that powerful antioxidant and protective effect on the liver. So even if we talk about going back to black cohosh and how it's had a bit of a bad rap, the reason being is black cohosh was reported in some rare cases to contribute to liver damage a few years ago. But I think we shouldn't just totally write off black cohosh for hormonal health just because it had that minimal effect on some people. And having St. Mary's and dandelion and rosemary and some of those other herbs in FEM21, I think helps to negate some of those issues that people may have about black cohosh and liver health. And again, you know, just having good liver herbs helps so much with, you know, hormonal metabolism. So it's a really key point in if you're working on your hormonal health, you've really got to have your liver in check.
Absolutely. And you know, with the black cohosh debacle, to be honest, it was just so misconstrued because realistically it was extremely rare when you look at the amount of people that have taken black cohosh. I mean, let's not even dive into the amount of pharmaceutical damage that occurs every day. So if you're to have a herb that affected, you know, 3 people in 100,000 people, that's actually pretty good odds. You know, and at the same time, you don't know what other variables are going on. That's So yeah, but milk thistle, absolutely stunning herb. And you know, I've even heard of it being used in some rehab clinics as well because of its powerful protection on the liver. So next herb, licorice. What a gorgeous, gorgeous herb. And you know, I think this is a funny one where people are like, oh no, I hate licorice. And I'm like, no, you have no idea.
So licorice is I would say it is my most favourite herb for the adrenals. I think withania is, you know, definitely up there, but withania has sort of like that modulating effect on thyroid and adrenals, but I think licorice is a bit more, you know, helping the adrenals. And also licorice is great for in combination with other herbs for hormonal health as well, in terms of ovulation regulation. And in liquid herbals, you know, I would use, say, specific for polycystic, I would go maybe like licorice and peony and black cohosh, you know, to help with regulating our cycles. So I love licorice for adrenals, but also for hormonal health. And also, for somebody that suffers with low blood pressure, having some licorice in your daily, you know, routine really just helps to negate some of those, you know, that fatigue and that dizziness and some of those things that can be associated with low blood pressure. So, yeah, I love
absolutely
licorice.
Yeah, and the good thing about licorice, with women and their blood pressure is, like, quite often us women tend to be on the lower end. So it's such a beautiful action. And on top of that, if we're getting one of those nasty liquid herbs, it certainly helps it, the medicine go down a little bit easier because it tastes so sweet.
I love licorice.
Oh, me too.
Oh. Even as a kid, I'd eat like molasses straight out of the horse's drums and stuff like that. I just love that.
That's awesome. I know, like quite literally, if I'm making up a tincture and there's licorice, like I'll be like having some, like a little treat, you know. So good. Okay, and then moving on to more of the gut health specific ingredients. I mean, just a good old classic slippery elm. I mean, that it is such an amazing ingredient. Why do you have slippery elm in your formula?
So I love slippery elm as it helps with reducing inflammation within the gut in terms of the mucosal membrane inflammation that can come about from food sensitivities or IBS or dysbiotic gut in terms of good and bad bacteria in the gut, which can also drive inflammation. So it's such a nice, dulcet, carminative herb that helps to line and coat that mucosal membrane. So if things are running raw in the gut, slippery elm really helps to even provide like that bit of a barrier of protection for that irritated, inflamed gut. And I also love it as a prebiotic too. So, you know, a variety of different fibers help with supporting good bacterial growth and a healthy balance between good and bad bacteria in the gut. So, yeah, you know, soluble and insoluble fibers both important. And that's why I've included slippery elm in there.
And you've even got probiotics in your blend. If your blend wasn't already good enough, like it's got probiotics in it. So tell us about the species that you chose.
So I really did a broad spectrum. I think there's 14 different types of different species of probiotics. And the probiotics that I've included in FEM21 are sourced from fermented foods. And so they're you know, temperature stable, which is great, and they continue to ferment within the tub.
Wow, that's
which
cool.
Is great. Yeah. I mean, I've had FEM21, you know, experimentally that I've left for a period of time and then opened that up and, you know, tasted and smelt that fermentation of the probiotics within the formula, which I think is pretty cool.
Wow.
And so I think it's important, like, to have just a variety of good bacteria within the gut because, you know, we're learning more and more about the actions of specific strains. But if we've got a good variety in there of different types of good bacteria, then they're kind of supporting one another for a variety of actions and, you know, helping to support our immune system and healthy, you know, functioning of inflammation control within the immune system and the production of even certain vitamins and minerals, certain vitamins like vitamin K and, you know, helping to absorb B12 better. Our good bacteria plays a part in a variety of things in gut function. So we're learning more and more about the importance of having a healthy microbiome. So probiotics, I think, is good for everyone to maintain, especially if you've been drinking tap water and it's killed off all your good bacteria within the gut, or you've been taking antibiotics, or you've been taking the pill, you know, these sorts of things can annihilate our good bacteria within our gut. So rebuilding that, I think, is really important. And it's not uncommon for me to prescribe an additional, you know, or specific probiotic to patients with FEM21 as well, because I think, you know, different probiotic strains do specific things which are helpful at certain times. And then so long as we can keep populating and colonizing from that initial probiotic therapy onwards, then our guts are a lot happier.
Absolutely. And I mean, if anyone doesn't know how important the gut is to your health right now, like, they're definitely living under a rock.
And, you know, Hippocrates says, father of all medicine, that all disease starts within the gut.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, our gut, our liver and our bowels are our most powerful detoxification pathways. So, you know, considering that we're living in a soup of toxicity within our environment, we really need to ensure that we're supporting healthy detoxification through the liver and our bowels. And, you know, that's something that I suffered with for such a long time, you know, being constantly bloated and bowels were irregular, and then hormonally I would be so bloated and gassy, and my bowels were even more irregular around my period, and, you know, loose and then hard. And I think, you know, just having that regulation out with probiotics and fiber, so I'm not gassy and bloated anymore, is just made me feel so much more comfortable. But I also has increased or improved my resilience or tolerance to foods that before I've been quite sensitive to.
Yeah, absolutely. So with FEM21, as you know, given that it's a retail product that everyone can access, which is awesome. Also, as naturopaths, you know, we're always quite careful as to what we recommend that isn't practitioner prescribed. So tell us a little bit about what's the difference with your product in terms of the quality that goes into it and the ingredients that you've chosen.
Yeah. So I guess, like you said, I do like to have that be in that retail space so it is available to more people. But I also have quite a few naturopaths using it and other practitioners, acupuncturists, integrative GPs, chiros using it in practice as well. So the difference between like a retail product compared to a practitioner product is in manufacturing, I suppose the TGA has Therapeutic Goods Association in Australia has different rules for different sectors. And FEM21 actually comes under a sector of being a functional food. So it allows me a little bit more freedom in labelling, which is great. And I source, I guess, you know, in terms of, I don't know how they're manufacturing practitioner products. I haven't sort of looked into that in great detail, just from what I understand from, you know, seminars and things that we attend, that, you know, a lot of their ingredients are backed by science, which is awesome. And, you know, they've got their standards for manufacturing. And I do certainly in practice recommend practitioner products 99% of the time. But I suppose for assurance with manufacturing with FEM21 from me is that coming from that clinical naturopathic background, it was really important to source ingredients that I knew were clean, as organic wherever possible, coming from an ethical source. And I think those sort of factors, we're really careful with our, you know, our blending and our mixing, and to ensure that per scoop you're getting the dosing, the therapeutic that you need in order to be effective. So, yeah, I set that right from the get-go. My manufacturer is literally 10 minutes away from where I live, and I have a great relationship with them. So I'm visiting them frequently to, you know, make sure that we're keeping on top of everything from a manufacturing perspective. So yeah, I've been really happy with the quality, and I know because I'm, you know, I still use it every day. And so I can, you know, feel and taste that consistency through each batch, and we're doing batches pretty frequently. So like a fresh batch every like twice a month at this stage, which is great. So yeah,
awesome.
So it's keeping consistent with that. And I guess from a practitioner point of view, I think we like to know, you know, doses of what we're using and that side of things. And as a functional food, we don't necessarily have to label that. However, I've still disclosed that through my website. So if there's, you know, any prakis or anybody that wants to know exactly how much Vitex is in there or how much black cohosh, they can go to my website and find that info.
That's awesome. And that really does set that apart from other things that just get slapped on the shelves these days, because I think, and obviously it's the difference between a professional, like someone who's actually a practicing qualified naturopath who's going to create something like this, as opposed to, you know, one of the latest influencers who've just like slapped a few things together and, you know. Yeah, absolutely. So with FEM21, I'm assuming there would be a huge amount of success stories. Do any come to mind of stories that, you know, women who've used the product?
Yeah, so it's so nice hearing feedback, and I think that's just, you know, that's why we do what we do, in terms of, you know, it just, that comes above and beyond anything else. The rewards of actually helping people are awesome, and I get emotional when I think about it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I think, you know, just come to mind, like, people's hormonal acne clearing up and their confidence, you know, improving, and people that haven't had a period for like over 18 months after coming off the pill or training really hard, and their periods come back after, you know, 2 weeks of being on FEM21, and then finally feeling, you know, feminine again. And
that's awesome.
You know, whose mood and anxiety is improved because, you know, their hormones were so out of balance that they were like on a roller coaster each cycle, and really feeling like they can level out and function better day to day, and more energy, and people sleeping better, and you know, fertility stories, you know, hear that as well as awesome when, you know, women have been trying for, you know, IVF, and then they get pregnant naturally on FEM21.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, all of that stuff is, yeah, it's really great. So I'm really happy how it's helping women in the world.
So you should be. And the way that I personally came across FEM21 was because I had started my online, like, 4-week detox program ebook. And I really wanted to, because it's available to the public, you know, it's not something people had to see me for a consult, but at the same time, I knew how supportive herbal medicine would be for them. And I really wanted to find something that everyone could access. And that's actually how I found FEM21. And obviously I started using it, and everyone that was doing the detox started using it and got really great feedback from it. So it's really cool that you've made something that everyone can access, because honestly, I, as a naturopath, you know, we all hear some prakis get a little bit protective over, you know, the difference between practitioner grade and what you can get over the counter. And of course, yes, we do want to make sure that we promote quality. However, you know, I don't think it always has to be only practitioner. You know, if there's something that everyone can access, why wouldn't you want to help them access that if they maybe can't afford to have a consult, or they can't afford that prolonged care, or they can't afford 10 products when instead you can get it all in one powder?
Snaps to you, Jade. That's awesome.
There you go. And we're done. No. So what's, you know, as a practitioner, what would be one of the most common problems that you see in, as a female centered naturopath, but something more commonly that is told to them, to that woman, that, you know, this is just something you have to live with forever, and then they've come to see you and turns out you actually can heal this condition and they've got great results from, what would you say is the most common?
I would say endo and period pain. You know, I agree. So, you know, there's no cure. It's just something you're going to have to manage with laparoscopies or the pill or naprogesic, you know, or painkillers.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the biggest thing that I'm seeing in practice that we're significantly shifting for women in terms of their quality of their period and their symptoms. And I wouldn't say it's just FEM21 that's helping in that space. You know, I'm definitely recommending a full treatment plan for them to support them. You can really make a significant difference in terms of the quality of people's lives that have endo or, you know, severe period pain by, you know, working with them naturally through herbs and supplementation and diet and lifestyle adjustments.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's something that speaks to me on a personal level because I've suffered from excruciating dysmenorrhea my whole life. And I've been to ED a couple of times and I had a laparoscopy when I was 21 and they actually told me nothing was found and I never believed it. And to be honest, it was in a small country town where, you know, from what I learn now, you know, you've got to see an advanced trained excision surgeon and all sorts. And back then, gosh, like they probably didn't even know what was like staring them right in the face. And so personally now that's another journey that I'm reopening and trying to investigate. And so naturally, like I'm very, very passionate about, you know, teaching this message to other women that you should not have to suffer in pain. You should not have to live like that. That is, it's just not normal at all.
Yes.
So let's talk about the pill.
How long have we got?
Exactly. I'll save the best to last. Look, I mean, if we go forever, we can always create this a two-part series, but we'll see how we go. So, you know, the pill, look, where do we start? But it is, I think it's becoming more and more quite more and more known that the pill just there is, it's not serving anyone, if you were to put it lightly. What are your views that come to mind on the pill?
I guess, you know, like years ago from personal experience, just in terms of how the pill affected me, was really not good. And then, you know, in a clinical space, seeing women put on the pill so frequently for just dumb reasons, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because you think that you need to be on the pill, you know.
Honestly. It's
just dumb. Anyway, and I think too, from a contraceptive perspective, that it's so much more empowering to as women to be in charge of our fertility and knowing our body and our cycles and also putting that responsibility to our partner as well, so that it's a shared thing that we're both empowered about managing rather than you know, using the pill to suppress ovulation, to suppress our natural periods. It affects our liver health, it affects our gut health, and it disrupts that natural flow of, you know, our brain to ovarian connection, and it's not good for a variety of systems within our body, not just in terms of hormones. So I think there's not enough choice out there for women in terms of contraception and also managing their hormonal balance naturally. And so if we can educate and provide them with options then that they feel comfortable with, then I think you're in such a better space that, you know, you don't need the pill.
I think your dog agrees as well. I love that. And, you know, one thing that really upsets me is that women feel like they've lost control because they often say to me, I don't think my partner will want to use condoms or something like that. I mean, before we even start talking about, you know, symptoms and thermals and stuff like that. And that really upsets me that they feel like it's actually on them to have to be the person that prevents pregnancy if that's not what they want. You know, that it just shouldn't be like that. Like you said, it should be a joint thing that you're working on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the decision to have children is a joint decision. So why wouldn't be the decision to manage that be a joint, you know, responsibility together? So I think it is unfortunate that there's not a lot of easy options for women to manage their fertility. You know, of course there's symptom charting and, you know, there's condoms. You know, the IUDs are another option for fertility management, but I'm not a huge fan of the copper IUD just because of zinc copper balances and heavy periods and issues that go along with that. The Marina IUD I probably think is a little bit of a lesser of evils, but, you know, you're still absorbing those fake progesterone into your system. And, I mean, I had the Marina for quite some time after I had my second daughter. And just even having that foreign body in your, you know, uterus, it just doesn't feel right. Same like with the Implanon or the NuvaRing is another thing to talk about as well, which is like super strong. It's just like a pill, you know. So we want to as much as possible get rid of those synthetic hormones out of our system and manage things naturally. I mean, I'm lucky that I'm in a space in my life now where I've decided I don't want to have any more children. My husband's had a vasectomy. But after I had the Marina out, you know, I was temperature charting. We were using condoms. And after a while, like we did that probably for about 2 or 3 years. It took him a long time to make the decision to have a vasectomy. we got there in the end. But, you know, you just kind of get used to it and it becomes routine and it's not such a big deal. And, you know, and that was okay. So you just make it work.
I think that the symptothermal method is the most empowering thing that a woman can do. But I absolutely love every morning checking my temperature and putting it in my little chart in my Kindara app and seeing if I am getting that temperature peak in the second phase. And, you know, I think that's really cool that you get to actually see this information about what's happening with your hormones and, more importantly, understanding, okay, is my luteal phase too short or too long, or is my follicular phase too short or too long? And that can be really useful information for your naturopath as well. So it's, and it doesn't, it takes, you know, 30 seconds a day, not even. Like, it's just such an easy thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. Agree with you.
So with the pill then, of course, you know, if we're telling women that we don't want them to be on the pill, then, you know, what are the alternatives? Of course, a lot of women are asking. So, of course, that would be the symptothermal method. Are there any other alternatives that you talk to women about?
You know, condoms are probably the easiest thing, I would say. Just if you want to be super safe, cycle, especially if your cycle is a little bit irregular, you don't exactly know when you're ovulating, your fertile window is changing, you know, condoms are probably, just the easiest thing. In addition, you know, otherwise to that, you could also, I know it's a little bit old fashioned, but you could also consider doing a diaphragm or a cervical sponge, which acts as a barrier for, you know, preventing sperm to reach in through the cervix and uterus. So, you know, there are other options. They're not talked about a lot because uterus is more than happy to prescribe you the pill, you know. But I think to, you know, investigate other things that are out there that you can use and just give it a go, you know. Yeah. There's nothing wrong. It's not like you're out of pocket huge amounts of money for trialing these things. And so you may as well give it a go. If it works for you and your partner, then awesome. If not, then keep researching, keep asking the question about what's right for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, diving a little bit back into the controversy around the pill, you know, one of the worst things about the pill is the fact that it's most commonly given to teenage women. and yet our estrogen receptors haven't even fully developed yet, and so on. And so we see women who, you know, they get put on the pill because they have irregular periods, which, to be honest, could be just kind of normal when they first get that period, and then they come off and it uncovers all these issues. So I'm assuming that's something you would see a lot of.
And I, you know, making it my little mission as much as possible in life, using the platform that I've got with PEM21, which is awesome, to educate women about, you know, the pill and options to come off it and alternatives, and just understanding how much it affects that brain to ovarian connection. And it's like, if you imagine your pituitary is like the puppet master, and then your ovaries are at the end of those strings, and the pill just comes in and cuts those strings. And so you've got to reestablish that flow between the pituitary and the ovaries. And so when you start your periods when you're a young teen, it takes a while for that maturation between our pituitary and ovaries, our brain ovarian connection, to get there. It's even up to 12 years for that maturation to happen. So if you think maybe you'd start your period at 12, then potentially not until you're 24 that you may establish a healthy hormone balance and flow. And so there are going to be changes and fluctuations over that maturation phase. And so if you're coming in with the pill before then, you know, what's that doing to that development longer term for the rest of your life? Because that's when you're setting that stuff up. Mm. So if you're going to do it, just wait.
Yeah.
After 24, at least, you know. And if women are like, you know, my doctor said I have to be on the pill to manage my endo, and I said, I'll often say, okay, look, I'm not going to go against that if that's something that you feel like you really want to do, just so long as you have all the information. Mm. But then maybe consider every, like, 3 months having a little break. Once a year, I beg your pardon, having a break for 3 months. So you're off the pill over that time. You can have a bit of a hormonal reset. You can have some natural periods back. And then, look, after the end of that 3 months, if you want to go back on the pill, then do that. But at least you've given yourself a little bit of space for things to come back into balance.
And this raises another thing that really, really frustrates me. It grinds my gears that women are told that they get put on the pill to regulate their periods, which is just the biggest misnomer out there. Like, the fact that those bleeds are not real periods.
It's so crazy. Yeah. Mm. They're not real periods, but I think there's something energetic about having a period in seeing that blood flow for women. So even though it's kind of pointless having period bleeds, I think it's something releasing about that anyway. So I still encourage women to have periods when they're on the pill if that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Real. Yeah.
Mm. And then, so what would you say to women who are like, well, you know, my, let's say for example, my acne is so bad when I come off the pill, my acne flares up, which is a common one that we see. Mm-hmm. So what would you be doing with a woman then when they come off the pill to support them and try and prevent that flare up, which could potentially happen?
Yeah, so I would start them on FEM21 as an overlap. So whilst they're still on the pill, you know, for a month or two before they're planning on stopping, so that they've started the process of supporting their liver and supporting their gut and alkalizing their body and, you know, getting on top of their adrenals and just bringing in some of that additional support there. And then I would do, you know, definitely look at doing some zinc. Zinc's probably my most prescribed supplement in practice. I know it helped me immensely with my skin. Vitamin A can be useful as well, depending on where they're at, you know, cleaning up their skincare regime. But also letting them understand that a breakout post coming off the pill may just be a bit of a detoxification response. It's a bit of a rebound of your hormones, trying to figure out what they're going to be doing naturally again. And so generally it's fairly short-lived if they're having breakouts post-pill. And, I encourage them to be on, their FEM and their zinc and their supplements so that they know that they've got that support in the background there.
Mm, absolutely. And before we start to wrap this up, I definitely want to touch on Roaccutane for acne. What are your thoughts on that beast?
Yeah, it is a beast. I discourage it as much as possible because I think it can have such a detriment, like it's toxic. It's toxic on your system. It's toxic for your brain. It's disrupting your other fat-soluble vitamin balance like vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K. It's really hard on the liver. It just dries up all your mucous membranes, not just, your skin and drying up your oil, but it's drying up your mucous membranes throughout your gut and vaginally and in the mouth and eyes and nose. And so you want to, avoid that. If they've been taking Roaccutane and they've done their course, I then, do some pre-liver, liver support to clear that out of their system as fast as possible, and then bringing in some of those other fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K.
And my husband, when we first met, this is before I was studying what I know now, and he was on Roaccutane, and I watch, he's a pretty strong-headed person, and the mental stuff that goes on and the nightmares and just becoming short-tempered. But after doing the course, now, his sebum balance to keratin is completely out of whack, and that will probably never fully heal because it creates permanent damage. So, I honestly think if there's two things that I never want people to go on, if they can help it, it'd be the pill and Roaccutane.
Yeah. Good on you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, third would probably be antibiotics, unless it's life-threatening.
And I remember doing an assignment when I was studying naturopathy on Roaccutane, because obviously that was an area of interest for me because I had such terrible skin hormonal acne. And looking into some of that research around the side effects associated with Roaccutane is pretty full on. And I even came across a group, the Survivors of Roaccutane, which is like a support network for people that were, suicidal and really depressed when they were on Roaccutane. So I think that, it's just something that is just so strong that it's messing things up in the brain, in the body, with the liver. We've got enough stress on our system, let alone consciously choosing to introduce it into our body.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, whatever comes out in the skin is really just a report card on what's going on inside. So we just need to address what's going on. And sometimes it's actually pretty straightforward once you get to the root of it. But of course, people that have suffered these things for so long, they just feel like that's, it's a life sentence. This is who I am. Oh, it's normal for me, That's heartbreaking to hear. Well, honestly, I feel like we could talk all day about these topics. It's been incredible having you on, and I honestly think I'll probably get you back on at least a couple of times just to, open up, expand these topics even further. And especially because these are the topics that women ask me to do podcasts and videos on the most. So it's awesome having you on. And before you go, I do have two questions though that I do ask everyone that comes on. And well, this one that I'm about to ask you is a new one that I've implemented today. And that is, what's your number one recommended health hack?
Oh, good question. I would probably say green smoothie.
Yeah.
I would say green smoothies. Add a green smoothie into your day. It really can help your overall health. And it's something easy, you know. It's not like you're going to take everything away and limit stuff, you know. It's just one little add-in.
What goes in your green smoothie?
Ooh, I'm very, you know, I don't like the same thing all the time. So I often, you know, base it on spinach. I might do some cucumber or some broccoli or cauliflower for veg. Some fruit, I'll do frozen berries, banana, sometimes some orange or citrus, some peaches, depending on what's in season, mango. And then I'll do a variety of nuts and seeds. So I might do like some almond meal or flax seeds or chia seeds, hemp seeds. I'll put some protein powder in there, like some pea protein powder or, you know, some clean whey or whatever it might be. For protein powder, depending, or change it up. And then also do some, you know, good oils. So maybe some coconut oil or some flaxseed oil too. And then I've put my FEM21 in that as well. So
that sounds like a powerhouse.
Well, it just varies, you know. Sometimes it's more complicated. Other times it's more simple, just depending.
Yeah, it literally, it's like having nature's own multivitamin in a drink, really.
100% easily digested. You can have it as a meal replacement because you're covering all your macros. And so, yeah, I think it's easy. Nutribullets are so readily available.
Yeah.
And, you know, those clean blenders and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so if there was one thing that you could change in the current healthcare system, what would it be?
Stop prescribing the pill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I would say that would probably be, just on topic. But ideally for the world, the healthcare world, I would really like to see naturopaths registered and able to prescribe or, blood tests and pathology covered under Medicare. That would be my ultimate thing.
Oh, my gosh. That would be unreal. That would be so good. And I agree. I also am pro-registration as well. I think it would just make a difference. We want to all work together. There's no reason why we can't. And like yourself, I've also worked with integrated GPs. And when everyone's integrating together, it's the best system.
100%. With, you know, each profession has their own pros and cons, right? But we've got our resources. And I think when you combine that with Western medicine, you know, just that those resources working together really gives the best outcomes for patients.
Absolutely. Well, Mia, it's been so, so lovely having you on today. If anyone wanted to find more about what you do, where they can get FEM21 or even follow you for inspiration, where should they go?
So please head to, I've got a website for FEM21. We're also on Instagram as well and Facebook. Just search up FEM21. Also, I kind of have two sort of arms of my business. I've got my clinical practice, which is Lifestart Naturopathics, and we're in that same space. You know, we've got a website, Instagram and Facebook too. So, whether it's clinical consults or FEM21, you can find us online.
Beautiful. Oh, I have no doubt that I'm going to be getting you on again fairly soon, if that's okay with you.
Of course, we finally made it work. And it's been so great. We've had such a good connection and a great flow of the conversation. And I really appreciate that opportunity to share some of my experience and knowledge.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Honestly, I think everyone is just going to be getting their notepad out and writing down so many notes on this one. Well, thank you so much, Mia. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I'm jealous that you're in Queensland.
You're funny. It's the best.
Yeah. All right. Have a beautiful day. Take care.
Thank you, Jade. Thanks so much.
If you love today's episode, please show us some love. I'd love if you took a screenshot of this podcast and tagged us at Jade Walker Health on Instagram, and I'll always reshare it as well. If you haven't already, hit subscribe and please leave a review so you can help this podcast grow. To continue the thought-provoking conversation on today's episode or anything natural health and living an epic life, join us inside my free Facebook group by searching for the Jade Walker Way community. For loads more healthy info, the tea store, ebooks, and online courses, head straight to jadewalker.com.au. I'll speak to you soon.